Hello and welcome back to the Makeup Artist Chronicle. I am your host, Julia, and I'm so happy that you're here. Thank you for coming here, spending your Friday with me. I hope you're having a great week, and I hope that you have something super fun and exciting and delightful planned for the weekend. Maybe a pumpkin patch, maybe a pumpkin spice latte, who knows? But either way, I'm excited for you. So little update about me. If you recall last week, I was freaking out a little bit. I was freaking out a lot of it. I had began to notice that in photos, in the mirror, in videos, my face was changing shape. Like my lower half of my face, my jawline was almost like moving to one side. It wasn't even anymore. And I realized that because I have TMJ, because I clench my teeth so frequently, because I grind my teeth at night, I was literally just, my face was changing. My jaw was literally moving. And it was enough to send me into a spiral and lead me to come on air and be like, hey, what do I do? Who do I go see? Please tell me I shouldn't be freaking out as much as I am. Basically, help, SOS. I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who reached out, who gave me advice, and I also have a voicemail that I want to play for everyone because one listener called in, left a voicemail, and has some really, really great pieces of advice around this. So if you are someone that is going through something like this or you have TMJ, this may be a really great resource. So let's roll that voicemail.
Hello, darling. My name is Jennifer, and I'm a massage therapist, and I heard your podcast talking about the difference in your face shape because you're TMJ. Dentist is a good place, but not to start. Find a massage therapist that specializes in TMJ. Some estheticians do that too. So hopefully by now somebody has reached out, and so I'm going to second that motion. Definitely find a massage therapist. They can do intraoral. They can work inside your mouth. And that really, really helps because you can't get it all from the outside. So cranial structural or cranial sacral massage therapist, they work intraorally as well. They wear gloves and they do lots of things like in your gums and on your jaw, but your voice and talking and your face, it's your who you are, my love. And so that's who you need to take care of it. A dentist as well, they are good for structural, but they want to cut and poke and yikes. So don't do that first. Go to a dentist, absolutely. Get the x-rays, get all the things, but find somebody who does structural work. All right, thank you for all that you do. I am a makeup enthusiast, hoping to be a MUA someday. I love you and everything that you do. You inspire me daily as I'm putting on my makeup to get ready for work. And good luck.
Thank you so much for calling, Jennifer. You just made my entire day. First of all, thank you for sharing such amazing advice. It is truly, truly helpful. And it's also good to know that I don't have to go and deal with like the whole like drill. What was that movie with Steve Martin where he was like a crazy dentist? Like that vibe. Dentists, I know a lot of us get nervous about. So I'm very grateful to you for giving me an alternative. I will definitely check it out. But also, I just want to say, I love your energy. You came through the technology and your energy was just so warm and comforting and exciting. And it makes total sense that you are in a career currently where you're very close to people, literally like touching them, and that you're aspiring to be an MUA. Honestly, it's been such a fulfilling career for me, and so I'm so excited for you, and I know you're going to do great things. I can hear it. I can hear your beautiful voice, and just it strikes me that you're the kind of person that really just wants to help people and help people feel like their best selves, and so the MUA path is definitely right for you, and I can't wait to see all of the amazing things you do. I'm so excited for you. Thank you so much for calling, for sharing your advice, and for sharing your story. It really does mean so much to me, so thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you too, and please keep me updated on how it's going for you and Let me know if you have any questions at all. I'm here for you. Oh, Jennifer, thank you so much for calling. Warms my soul. And I hope I can keep the soul fuzzies going because I have a really incredible conversation this week that I am letting you guys in on. You get to eavesdrop on this podcast, which is not a good analogy. Anyway, I have a really great conversation, like I was saying, with Brittany Lowe. She is a New York-based beauty brand entrepreneur. She is the founder of Beautini and Bea. So Beautini is essentially an on-demand hair and makeup service based in the Northeast here in the States. And they offer their services to brides on demand. So it's really great, really necessary as a makeup artist that has worked with a lot of brides. Sometimes the bride's got to jump through hoops, and Brittany is trying to streamline that entire process. Bea is her foray into product development. So right now she has this amazing face mist that also acts as a setting spray. It has hyaluronic acid. It has all of these hydrators, and it does set your makeup without any alcohol. So amazing. But ultimately where she wants to get into is creating very chic, very luxurious, very not taboo, not embarrassing sexual health products for women. And I think this is so incredible. So we have a very honest conversation around what it's like to start a beauty brand, what it's like to then take that beauty brand through a pandemic. And we talk very openly about sexual health and how we need to normalize the conversation around it, because sexual health is part of women's health, is part of all of ours health. And it's hard to talk about sometimes, like money is hard to talk about, but as long as we're all having these conversations with each other, we're able to make better choices for ourselves, because now we know what's out there and what other people are choosing. It's a really great conversation. I'm so grateful to Brittany that she sat down with me and had so much to share. This is such a fun talk. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I did having it. I know I say that every time, but I can't help it. These conversations are just so juicy and delightful. So enjoy. This is the Makeup Artist Chronicle with special guest Brittany Lowe. Brittany, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to be chatting with you and diving into more of like the entrepreneurial journey on the beauty side.
Yes, I know we were chatting a little bit before we hit that record button, and I just have to say, I love your energy. You just have this like beautiful energy, and it's not a surprise to me that you are, and we'll get to it, but you work very frequently with brides, because I feel like you're the kind of calming, centering presence that a lot of brides need as they're maybe freaking out about their big day.
I hope so. It's definitely a hard environment to be a part of and navigate, but I do try my best to like keep them centered, keep perspective, and make sure that they feel absolutely beautiful.
I would love to, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about your businesses, but I also just want to reverse it all the way back, because I feel like there's always maybe one memory or maybe a few memories of where the love of beauty begins for someone. I know I have mine. Do you remember what that was like for you? Do you have a moment that stands out in your mind?
Yes. And it's funny. It was when I was 2 years old. It was before one of my first ballet recital. And that's when I discovered my mom's makeup bag. And I played with all the products. I had like lipstick all over my face, like dark eyeshadow. I looked crazy. And my mom, like I thought I looked amazing, of course. So my mom let me go on stage looking like a clown. And just like looking back at the videos and the photos and my poses, I never felt more beautiful. And that's where like I realized like one, just playing with colors and different like textures and having fun with makeup. That's when it started for me. But that's when I also realized it's more of a feeling. Like beauty is how you feel. It's not just about like the surface level. You can have a great face and makeup on, but if you don't feel great, that's more important. And I just realized like, okay, I could literally look crazy with makeup and lipstick all over my face, but like, look how beautiful and amazing I feel. And that has always been like that defining a moment of when I truly fell in love with the concept of beauty.
Oh, that's an amazing story. Yeah, that's, I feel like so many people I talk to, it's like, I found my mom's makeup. maybe I wasn't supposed to, but I did. I did the thing. And it's so interesting how we gravitate towards that. So then did you know, I mean, maybe you knew it too, maybe you figured it out later, but did you know that beauty was something you wanted to do as a career?
No, I'd say grow up, like, you know, from 2 to 7.
Yep.
You'll go through like, oh, I want to be a teacher. I did ballet. So I thought maybe a ballerina at one point. But yeah, every year I would have those ballet recitals. And again, like I'd fall in love with putting on my own makeup. And I think from the start, it wasn't that I necessarily wanted to do makeup on other people, but I just loved how it made me feel and playing with the product itself. And so in the second grade, funny enough, my dad brought me to school one day and, you know, casually the parents always ask, so what do you want to do when you grow up? And, you know, I went through that teacher, ballet, I don't know, maybe police officer or something like that. But at that point I said, I wanted to go into beauty and he suggested I work at Estee Lauder, a Clinique and name some big beauty brands. And I turned around as a second grader and I was like, no, dad, I'm going to have my own beauty company. And I actually wrote it in my journal that day. So it's pretty wild. Like it started very young for me. And I think that's a blessing and a curse, but I knew very clearly that this was my destiny at an age of 7.
That's amazing.
It's kind of wild. It's wild. Looking back, I'm like, really?
No, I know. And were your parents supportive?
Oh yeah. The nice thing is, something when I look back at like how crazy that sounds and doing what I am doing now, I always think about like, why did I actually take that leap? And I think it was very crucial of my parents. They always made things seem like anything is possible. Like, sure, you want to be a ballerina. Absolutely, you can. Sure, if you want to make $1 million selling cookies, you go do it. They didn't make me feel crazy or silly. And echoing that, when I went to school, I chose Babson College, which is number one for entrepreneurship. And everyone had side ventures. And so I ended up actually turning down a full-time offer with a conglomerate beauty company, my dream corporate job, great offer. And I turned it down and no one at school thought it was crazy. They're like, of course you should do that. You're achieving your dreams. Absolutely. Once I graduated, people were like, what were you thinking? You have zero work experience. You gave up this wonderful offer. You're moving to one of the most expensive cities in the country, New York City. Like, what are you thinking? And so I do think that the environment that I was raised in and spent time in, as I developed my like passion and my ideas, was crucial for me to actually take that leap.
Whoa. Do you ever, okay, this is going to be a selfish question. Do you ever have moments where you're like, well, what if I had?
So I do. Okay. So it's funny because one of my close friends who I went to her wedding actually last weekend so she was in the same internship program. We both got full-time offers and the brand that I was supposed to work on, if I were to have done the full-time offer, she ended up starting on and she's crushed it in the corporate life. And so it is cool to see her like grow and flourish down that path. And part of me, I think in the lows of entrepreneurship, when you're like, okay, like this is very expensive. Are we gonna like, can I pay myself X amount? Like what do these costs look like? It's very easy to fantasize that corporate world. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. Like she went down corporate world. I went down the entrepreneurial journey and we both keep each other in check where it's like, no, your life is great. And she'll be like, you know, corporate life is good, but you're doing something really cool too. But it was definitely funny to be able to compare a little bit and just realizing that they're so different. And ultimately I am very happy that I chose the path that I did.
Yeah, I know we were talking about, you know, one of the things about being an entrepreneur is finding the gut check, because in corporate, there's a hierarchy, you have a manager, the manager tells you what you should be doing, what yields, like what is good performance, where are you on that track? But when you're starting something on your own, and you're not only the founder or the boss or the manager, but you're everything, right? You're the marketer, you're the salesperson in the beginning, right? And And so, do you have something, whether it's a routine, whether it's certain people in your life, do you have something that helps you in those moments where you maybe either feel self-doubt or you have questions of like, okay, was that the right call?
Yeah, so I have so I had investors for Butini until recently, and so they stepped in as like my mentors, and like I could always use them as a sounding board. So whether it's someone who's like financially connected to the business or honestly any kind of mentor, I think is huge. Like I have a guy named Marty who's my mentor for Bea, and I just couldn't imagine. You know, it ultimately comes down to the founder and like their vision, because no one understands your vision better than you do. So you really have to trust yourself and your gut, because whenever I've gone against my gut, things never usually work out. But it's just nice to know, like, okay, am I crazy thinking this will work? Or like, you know, I am applying for this incubator. You know, there's this one question I'm thinking about answering it this way, but what do you think? And just having someone to bounce ideas off of. And secondly, I have an executive coach. And so she really helps me understand my gut and like my thought process. So, like, she'll help me talk through things. And it's almost like a muscle that I'm stretching is like, you know, these problems will arise. I work through them with her. Not necessarily leaning on her, but she guides that conversation. So as those problems arise in different ways or in different forms down the road, I already know like the strategy that I used in the past, and she's taught me to apply those to those future problems. So I think just getting help is always important, and surrounding yourself by people that you really respect and trust their opinions. But ultimately, it comes down to you. And I struggled, and I still am working on this now, is like trusting my gut and understanding what my gut is even telling me. But once you hone in on that and have clarity, I think that's your biggest tool in your toolbox to be leaning on.
Oh, that's great advice. Yeah, for sure. I think doing something on your own, like, I feel like no one ever really does. Like, there's always people in the background that are helping, and having a sounding board is so important. Because the other thing is, what sometimes people don't realize when they start something, whether it's becoming a freelance makeup artist or starting a beauty brand or anything of the kind, is your customer, your client, your consumer is not you. Like, odds are they probably have different interests than you do, or different concerns. And so having that sounding board of people that will say, you know, okay, well, have you thought about this this way? Have you thought about it that way? Will help kind of open your mind to different perspectives. Because sometimes I feel like, oh, I know the answer to that. Obviously, it's this. And then my client will throw a curveball at me, and I'll have to think of it in a completely different way.
Right. And even still, like, I think that having, like, I love going on to podcasts and connecting with other people, because there's been so many mistakes that I've made. And so if I can say, like, hey, you know, I tried that and I spent a lot of money on trying to make that work and it didn't work for us. Like, I love also connecting with other founders who are in different, like, stages of their journey, because I can learn, or we can go through it together as well.
Yeah. Could you maybe share some of those mistakes now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest part is like hiring, or like, for example, oh, a huge mistake. So Butini, you know, we're all about hair and makeup services for weddings and events. And I've done makeup. My whole goal was not to be the makeup artist. I wanted to create a brand. But how do you pitch a business when you don't have weddings, right? Like, we're trying to get brides to hire us, but we don't have brides. So I wanted to put together a really nice photo shoot to emulate what the Butini experience would be like. Hired this fantastic photographer, loved the photos, spent a fortune on those photos. Yeah, I think it was like, I think between all in like $10,000 to $30,000, like very, a lot of money. And
Oh.
I love the photos, but what I didn't realize is when I was reviewing the contract or understanding was that they still owned the rights to my photos. And I only had, and so I could only use them for 2 years. So imagine spending that much. That was one of my first purchase starting Butini, was that I didn't realize that that was a thing. And so then I had a fight with them, like the agency, 2 years later to buy them. And so it cost me, yeah, I think like $30,000 all in to own the photos. And luckily they worked with me on that. Like they knew like I wasn't going to put them on a billboard or anything like that. But that was something that was huge. And also another big part is I always say hire and find a really good accountant and a really good lawyer. So I kind of put together our like freelance stylist contract and, you know, like a bunch of different things that I was like, oh, I don't really need to incorporate my name or like, oh, let me just put together this contract or this agreement myself. And it turns out that I spent a lot more money down the road fixing them when I could have had that happen from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. A lawyer was like the first, I was like, I'm getting a lawyer because I can't, like, especially since we're a media company, I'm like, I can't have anything go wrong. Like I can't, my first cease and desist, I started sweating. I know it wasn't a big deal, but I was just still like, yeah, you don't know. And it's, you know, hiring a specialist that does is important. But yeah, I hear you. And I feel like what I've experienced as a makeup artist who, you know, I put stuff on social media, I put, you know, how I'm using this product or whatever, brands that'll reach out to me and be like, hey, we'll send you our new product before it launches. You can try it out, put it on your social media. And then they'll send a contract basically being like, we now own the rights to this. And I'm like, in exchange for one free product? No, that's not, like, pay me.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where I think that when it comes to certain topics, like when it's agreements or like legal stuff, you almost feel like you're in it all alone. And that's where like the more people you surround yourself going through things, you can ask questions of like, hey, and you realize that it's happened to, you know, like you almost feel ashamed, like, oh my gosh, this happened. I wish I did X, Y, and Z. But the more transparent you are throughout the process, you'll very quickly realize like, oh wait, there's three other people I know that went through this just like I did. Let me connect with them and see how they navigated it or how can I help them knowing what I know now.
Yeah, totally. So I want to talk about Beautini and Bea. Let me know the timeline. Did you launch them simultaneously? Beautini came first, right?
Beautini, like I started really 2014, but I launched full time March 2015. And then Bea, I just launched in this past June.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what was your vision for Beautini? Let's start with Beautini first because it is the firstborn. What was your vision for that? Like what made you decide to offer these services for weddings, for brides?
So I, you know, I had that job offer entering my senior year. So I had like the security of like, okay, let me focus on what could this beauty company look like? And I took a services marketing course at that time at Babson that I was really enjoying. And before that in high school, I got a loan from my grandma, I think for like $2,000, started Belo Cosmetics, created a mascara. I still think that half of that box is still in my parents' house somewhere. And I realized how hard it is to sell product. And so I wanted to be smart about it. I knew I couldn't raise a ton of money given my lack of experience and just not knowing what I don't know. And so after like, you know, as I was in that course, I was like, you know, there's something cool about work services. And I grew up catering and like kind of in the service industry. And so slowly I pull these pieces together of like, okay, eventually I want to do product, but what's that step beforehand? And I was like, I love empowering women in any way I can. And I want to incorporate that with my passion for beauty. And I was like, I think it would be, I would be able to have a greater impact on people and women specifically by working with them in an intimate setting, doing their hair and makeup where they feel amazing versus having our mascara displayed at a CVS or a department store. Like we were just not there yet. Like we just didn't have the means to really make an impact. So that's where I really landed on Beautini. And I wanted to be more of like an on-demand beauty service. But I, again, like I wanted that experience of empowering women. And I realized if they're trying to get a blowout before a meeting, they don't care about you. They don't really care about that service. They just need that blowout. So I was like, let me tweak this where, like, where is a time in someone's life that they actually value this kind of experience? And I had some friends getting married at that point, and they couldn't find a beauty brand that aligned with their, like, everyday beauty and didn't make them look completely different. So that's really how I landed in the wedding space, specifically for Beautini.
Amazing. Oh. And is it just in the New York area, or is it, where is it?
So we go in the Northeast, so we'll go into Connecticut, Massachusetts, like anywhere in the Northeast. We have traveled to Europe and throughout the country, but given obviously the pandemic, we stopped doing so. And I think that the top five wedding markets are in the Northeast. So there was really not a huge desire for us to be a destination company. I do like just focusing on our markets.
Yeah. What was that like with, you mentioned the pandemic. I know a lot of what the wedding industry took a huge hit.
Huge. It was, I honestly am still growing my hair back because I lost a third of my hair. It was very, very stressful.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't do any inclination of it. You know, it's, I just felt, it was devastating because you feel so bad for these clients where they've spend their life planning this one day, and then out of nowhere, they have to change it and they don't know when they can change it to. And for us, like, that is our business. So, like, you know, we were expected to do phenomenally, like, from a revenue perspective in 2020. And within a week, I think it was like 10 days, like, we, you know, I think like 200 weddings dropped and changed and postponed. And I had to let go of my entire team. And so it was really me having these, you know, it's one thing to move dates and, like, okay, you move it from one date to one up, but it was the emotional impact of these decisions that made it so hard. And naturally we're business too. So it wasn't like, oh, sure, if you don't want it, like, let me just give you all your money back. Cause, like, we wouldn't be here after the pandemic if we just gave their money all away and just expected them to put money down when they felt more comfortable. So it was really just trying to make sure that we were doing right by our clients, doing right by the business, and be trying to be there for the clients as they are navigating this unknown that we had no idea how to navigate ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a few wedding, like two weddings during the pandemic, very small, very safe, a lot of precautions as a makeup artist. And it was, I could feel like finally the hope and the joy of these brides that had their entire, they had to change. So, like, one of the weddings was a backyard wedding. It was supposed to be at this gorgeous location and all of these things were planned. And I remember she was so detailed about the color scheme and this and that. And, like, she just had this vision, and they had to completely rearrange everything. But sitting in my chair, she was like, there was nothing but hopefulness and happiness about the day, because she finally got her day and she was getting pampered and she was just like, I feel so beautiful. And I think that's, I agree with you. Like, the emotional piece is so important.
And that's really our team, even they loved doing the micro weddings. And I was hoping, like, the sentiment would stay, but, like, the girls who did end up having a micro wedding, they're just so happy. Like, they were, I think it was a very, like, grounding experience to go through that with your partner. And, like, okay, you might not get the vision, like, you might not get that wedding day that you dreamed of, and that breaks my heart. But to see these couples still choosing to have a micro wedding, like, they still were with their family and their loved ones, and they, like, really remembered why you have a wedding in the first place, and they're just so grateful, so happy. And so those were the, and they were just chill. There wasn't all the stress and, you know, like, oh, we have to do this and we have to do that. They really got to enjoy their micro weddings, which we really enjoyed and loved. And now I think it's becoming even more stressful now that, like, COVID is still here. And I think it's more frustrating than anything, but I agree with you. They're hopeful. They're just like, I'm so happy. Like, once they feel like they can get excited, they're just so relieved and just grateful that they can have a day where they are seeing their friends and they are seeing their family after probably not seeing them very much completely. In the last year.
And now, is Beautini rebounding right now? How's that going?
Oh yeah. Like, it's so busy. People are like, we've been turning down inquiries left and right, which is kills me because I'm like, ah, like, let's make room. But there's just not enough days in the year. And we're doing them every day of the week, which is wild. The hard part from a business perspective, like anyone who has been navigating their own business during this time, is that we had essentially, it's reallocated revenue, right? Like a lot of these clients put down their deposits and payments in 2019. We're in 2021. So like a lot of those, although like we are booming and like the wedding industry is like busier than ever, a lot of the vendors are just making up for all the business that they missed a year ago, which means that they really can't operate 100% and like take those inquiries that would have given them revenue for this year. So I always like to remind people that yes, from an outside, we're busy, but from a financial perspective, yeah, doesn't mean, yeah, that everyone's absolutely in the clear.
And so while you were navigating Beautini going through this crazy tumultuous time, you then also launched Bea. What are you, just a masochist, or are you just a total badass? I'm going with badass. But what was that like? Was that like planned, that timeline, or was that something that you, that like, talk to me about that experience?
I've been wanting to launch product for years, and I, you know, I had investors, mentors, like, okay, but Beautini is going so well, just focus on it. Once you hit this hurdle, then you can work on that. And then we'd hit it, and they're like, okay, once you hit this milestone, then you can work on that. So there was never this like time where I was like allowed or like gave myself to really start what I wanted to. And so once we postponed the majority of the weddings, like that happened within, you know, like the first few months, and it was, you got used to the chaos of weddings, but it wasn't like on weekends, we were operating 10, 20 weddings a weekend anymore. So I like to focus on the positives and like seeing the, you know, the pandemic, as horrible as it is, and you know, like many of us have lost people during this time, it's been horrific. At the same time, if you think about the positives, it's reminded people to like slow down, see what's important to them. And this is something that's been super important to me. And I was blessed with this time that I never had before to focus on that next step for me, which is Bea. So I had the weddings, you know, it kept, you know, once we moved people, like they would have some questions, but they were pretty good until 2021. So it allowed me to really focus on developing Bea. Like I had help from people. Like it was just a nice time to really hone in on like, what does this brand look like? And it was honestly a blessing of the pandemic that I had that time to build it out. And of course, how, you know, timing, we were supposed to launch in March before wedding season got crazy. We ended up launching in June. So it's been crazy trying to balance both, but it's been really exciting to see that like that's more of like this. I want to scale. I see the vision, and I want to scale Bea to a different level that I've scaled Beautini, and I'm really excited for like that.
Yeah, hope
and
could you what that might share like a little bit of that vision, or is it all super hush hush?
No. So Bea, the beauty of Bea was I was, again, with the pandemic, a lot of our clients are very successful at Beautini, busy schedules. With the pandemic, they had a lot of time. So I could do these virtual focus groups, ask them questions about their beauty routine, and just understand like where the white space may be in the beauty industry. And so I wanted to create my first product where it was using the advice from the brides. It was useful for a wedding day, but also being like half Chinese, half Irish, I felt like a lot of people couldn't really match my skin growing up at the local beauty counter. So I wanted it to be colorless. I wanted it to be universal, and I wanted it to be inclusive. And so we came up based on the feedback was they really worried about keeping their skin hydrated leading up to the big day, but also wanted their makeup to stay throughout the wedding. So I ended up creating the Bea Daily Hydrating and Setting Mist, 13 ingredients, super clean, but like very luxe fine mist. Have to send you some. It helps, like it has the hyaluronic acid and squalene to hydrate, but also has properties to naturally like lock in your makeup without alcohol and like drying your skin. So that is our first product. But the bigger vision that I learned is that a lot of women find beauty overall intimidating, overwhelming. And at Beautini, like they would open up about the relationships as they're opening up about beauty. And I think that there's a really cool white space for us to create skincare solutions for more like intimate concerns. It's like if you had a blemish on your breast, like on your wedding day or on your boot, or, you know, razor burn or even like lubricants, whatever. I think that there's a big space to empower women specifically to, instead of feeling the shame and guilt that this, you know, societal taboo that is revolved around sexual wellness, how do we create a lube that looks like a face serum that you're excited to display on your nightstand versus trying to hide it behind all your socks in your sock drawer? And, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to go into toys and whatnot, but more so like, you know, people don't like to talk about certain topics. And if you are in a lot of pain from like a big, you know, blemishes on your butt, or you're insecure about a bunch of things on your back or your dry, whatever it might be, like that affects you owning your sexuality, affects your confidence. But that could be, you know, we could help you with that through skincare products, but not a lot of brands like focus on that. And if they do, they're more like mass filled with crappy ingredients. Or you have brands that are super raunchy. They're like, oh my gosh, I don't want anyone to see me like buying these things or like on their Instagram. So we want to be more of like that sophisticated brand that plays in that the skincare, sexual wellness space that you know you can go to, talk about and feel comfortable. Because when you feel comfortable, that's when you're willing to experiment and try products that will essentially better you, better your confidence. And I'm really excited to lean into that direction with our next few products.
I'm obsessed.
Oh my God, really?
Yes. And as you were saying it, like the hyaluronic acid of like the product that you have right now, the mist, the hyaluronic acid, the squalane, all of it. I'm like, and it's a fine mist, it's a luxury product. I'm like, can someone please finally create like a body version of that? Because I am like a slippery seal trying to moisturize my body. I'm 5'9". I have a lot of surface area to work on. And yet no one has created something that is like good for my skin and healthy for my skin. And I agree with you. Like, it's not just our face or our neck. It's our whole body that informs our confidence for sure.
And you think about it, like, people spend hundreds on face creams and eye creams and all these things on your face. But then like when we put stuff on our body, we go to CVS and get like I used to get like the cheapest body lotion possible. But when you look at the labels, and that's where like, you know, consumers are becoming more educated. And so especially with the pandemic, when people could put time into face masks and hair masks and body treatments, like you're finding that people want and are demanding cleaner formulas for their entire body, because no matter where you put it, it is your skin, and there's very intimate parts on your body that you do want to be treating with gentle formulas. So I think it's important that, like, you know, like whether it's, yeah, I think there's just a lot of concerns that people have and don't really feel like there's a solution for it, or they don't want to talk about it on a Friday night out about, you know, like their razor burn and how they were super embarrassed while getting intimate with their partner because they have these dots, you know, like these blemishes all over. So I think that I'm excited to make people feel confident, own their sexuality, own their life, who cares what society thinks, and just have fun with it.
I'm cheering so hard right now. It's so true. And it blows my mind that like sexuality, specifically women's sexuality, is such like a hush hush. Let's not talk about it. Let's maybe after a few drinks at brunch, we'll like talk about it and giggle. And it's like this thing, but it's like the things that we go through, all of the awkward parts or the self-conscious parts or whatever it may be, is also one of the most universally relatable parts. So it's like, why aren't we talking about like, okay, well, like I would love to like do a reverse cowgirl, but I have butt knee and that affects my confidence and I don't want to experience that. And I feel like I'm missing out. Like,
right. And that's where, like, I think that right now you see extremes where like you either have people who are talking, you know, like, first thing they talk about, they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I did with this guy after a date, like blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh wow, like a lot of information. Or you have people like similar to salaries and money, like they just don't want to talk about it. But it's interesting, the real inspiration for Bea to be more sexual wellness was that I was having conversations with someone I know well, a girl that I was meeting who like is an investor, she's been dating her boyfriend for years, and they both were talking about, like, you know, like once they warmed up to me, they're like, you know, I've never had an orgasm before. And I was like, oh my gosh, like you're missing out, girl. Like, how can I help you? Like, what can I do? And so I was like, all right, like, how can I, like, is there a product? What can we do? And it was something that, like, these are very accomplished women that didn't want to talk about it because they did. I was like, wait, why don't people talk about this? This is something that we all, like, everyone has sex, everyone makes money. Like, there's always things that are universal, but why don't we talk about this? Because if they could, if someone could help resolve that and, like, guide them, their life would be even better, you know? And so that's where I was like, what else are things like that are weird for people to talk about or like in that direction where like you don't have to be like all zero to 100, but like how can we be sophisticated, subtle, but like still like bring it up where like you do feel your best? Because again, beauty to me is truly a feeling. If you are in pain or if you feel self-conscious, you're not gonna feel your most beautiful. So that's what the angle that we're going into, and like embracing those me moments throughout the day or throughout the night. We're like, let me do this for me. Let me, you know what? That does bother me. I get that no one can see it, but it bothers me. And that's important. So let me take that time out of my day.
Yeah, that's so valuable. And I think it's so important to normalize not only female sexuality, but yeah, just female empowerment. Just like, I feel like, and I don't want to get like too political or anything, but I feel like we live in a society where our worth financially is less than, our voice, the worth of our voice is seen as less than. And so a lot of us, you know, as women grow up and just internalize these things. And so we don't have the conversations around salary. We don't have the conversations around sexuality or even like feminine health. And it's time to like, I hope we're moving in the direction, and I hope brands such as Bea are helping us kind of normalize these conversations, and not only conversations in terms of what we're having with each other, but the kinds of inner dialogues that we have with ourselves. You know what I mean?
I love that. And that's, yeah, honestly, it is very true. It's not just normalizing this, but it is just normalizing those topics that you feel insecure about, because as a result, like when you think about like buying power and like from a business perspective, is like when you look at say KY warming gel or condoms or anything in sexual wellness, the dominant consumer is male. And so it's like, how do we change those conversations? Similar to fundraising, before it was very much male dominated, like those are the people that were investing in companies, right? We were able to change that conversation once women with the money to give out to these smaller business were part of that table. And that's where, like, if you relate it to sexual wellness, is like right now what 90 something percent of consumers are men. So how do I create products that women feel comfortable buying so we can even out that percentage? Because I think it's important, like you said, that we do show women, like generations after us, of course, that it is worthy. And it doesn't have to be like this serious thing. You can still have fun while doing it. But like, putting, you know, we're all about, especially right now, you put your money where your values lie, right? Like people are very, very much aligned. Like they want to align with brands and the founders and their stories more, you know, like, of course the product has to be good, but if two look similar, they're going to put it towards like ones that they can align with from a morals and value perspective. And I think that's something similar to this. It's like, how can we allow women to buy products they're excited about, but really stand behind a bigger mission of whether that's like a me moment for you, which is universal, but also that really gives more of a voice for women.
Yeah, I love that. I would love to see like Bea and Butini do like a little, like, here's a little gift for you, like a wedding night gift.
Exactly. I mean, from a legal perspective, from weddings, like you have to commiserate your marriage on the wedding night or it could be annulled. So there is an interesting, there's a lot of different overlaps between weddings. You know, it's beauty, but we focus on weddings, which is a relationship that's tying the knot. And Bea, which is beauty, but we're also very much into that intimacy, into the relationships. So I'm excited to be able to put on some cool events and like ease people into these conversations. Yeah,
I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me, am I invited?
Oh, wait, say again.
Am I invited to the event?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, you have to come. You gotta come to New York. I'll give you 6 months notice. You gotta come.
Perfect. I'm there. I am there. I have family in New York. They're dying to see me. God. So
I love that. Hey, like we have to, I think you definitely create conversations on important topics, which I love. And that's just like making people feel comfortable to have those conversations.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I look forward to continuing this conversation. But as we wrap up our recording for the day, I want to ask one final favor of you. Now, I know an entrepreneur's journey is different, even if it, within the beauty space, it's everyone's story is different. But is there one kind of stock piece of advice that you would give, like maybe as a starting point, say someone's interested in going into product development, what is the one thing that you would recommend they kind of nail in the beginning?
I can get clarity on your vision mm-hmm. first and trust the process, but trust your gut even more. So I think it's important if you have a really bad idea, naturally you want to ask people and get their feedback and they might, I think it's about like, okay, sorry, let me take it back. My biggest piece of advice is be dedicated and obsessed with the journey, but don't be glued to your idea because it's going to evolve and it's going to change. And you want that. Like you might have this really great idea in your head, but you want to speak to people who are going to potentially buy that product. And you might listen to some of their ideas and you might not, and that's okay. But I think that the more that you allow your vision to morph and become a reality as you bring it to market, that's going to set you apart from what's going to resonate for people to buy and really grow your business versus it simply being an idea that you were so locked into but had blinders on that it could have been really on its nose amazing, but because your vision got in the way, perhaps it's not the best iteration that it could have been.
Yeah. Oh, that's great advice. And I've learned that the hard way a few times, but
it's much easier said than done. So like, this is me just reiterating it. You'll have to probably find it out in your own journey. But I think that I've always had to remind myself, I'm like, wait, she doesn't like this, blah, blah, blah. And then be like, yeah, you know, they have a good point. Like, I actually agree with them now that I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So reflect on it. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's not like you know, if one person says they want orange packaging, another person says red, but you wanted pink. Like if ultimately you see it as pink, like you have to do pink. Like you also have to listen to what your vision is and what your gut is telling you. But it's helpful to say like, okay, like they wouldn't buy this product at $30, but they would buy it at $28. So maybe you do lower it by $2 and your numbers will show as well. But I think just adapting to this ever-changing process will allow you to really hit the success that you're probably envisioning.
Yeah. No, that's amazing advice. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your experience. I am so excited and I'm wishing you the best with Butini and with Bea, and I cannot wait to see how they both grow and normalize the conversation around female empowerment, both internally and externally.
Thank you so much again for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation and I'll be talking to you soon.
How great was that conversation? I think that Jennifer and Brittany have very similar energies. They both have this compassion, this vision, and this amazing like tone that just drew me in immediately. And they both sound very empowered and make it their goal to empower others. And I just think that that's an amazing, amazing energy. And if that is who this show has as both guests and listeners, I am so grateful to be in your company. And I appreciate you so very much. This is such a gift and such a joy that I get to do this and connect with you and have these conversations. And I'm just so overwhelmed with the soul fuzzies. But that is it from me this week. I will be back next week to chat with you a little bit more. And in the meantime, leave me a voicemail, 877-THE-MUAC. I can't wait to talk to more of you. This has been amazing. Have a great weekend. Give me that microphone.